This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And now, all that's needed is an audience.
What if I could put him in front of you? The man that ruined your life. If I could guarantee that you'd get away with it, would you kill him?
Many New Yorkers are leaving the city in fear of a fifth attack by the Fizzle Bomber.
Maybe he's doing the city a favor.
That kind of talk can get you in trouble.
The worst that I've already been through.
Something this job has taught me is that truth is stranger than fiction.
You're not talking about bartending, are you?
I'm not talking about bartending. We're in 1963.
That's impossible.
I'm a temporal agent. We prevent crime before it takes place.
The Fizzle Bomber. His next explosion will leave 11,000 dead.
You can do this. You have skills you've never had the chance to use, and I can give you that chance.
I get to be a temporal agent?
If you prove yourself.
Do I have a choice?
You always have a choice.
10, 9.
I always knew something was different about me.
6.
You're a gift given to the world through a predestination paradox. You're the only one.
You are at the beginning of your new life.
I know where I come from. Where do all you zombies come from?
Are you interested in the unknown?
Video games.
Old movies.
Horror.
Old TV.
Zombies.
Fantasies.
Comics.
The paranormal.
And science fiction.
Hot TV.
Games and more. Then tune in Tuesday nights at 10.
On Sci-Fi and Squid.
On Joy 94.9.
We like sci-fi because it frees you up and allows you to explore things that can be quite topical and quite contemporary, but you get to experiment in a genre that frees you up to do whatever you want. And I love science fiction for that. I love the speculative aspect of science fiction. I love creating worlds. So sci-fi is definitely something I love.
Okay. Yeah, so we're at an LGBTIQ radio station, Joy, at Joy 94.9.
Right.
Okay, so interesting film. For us, I'll introduce myself. I'm Sonia from Sci-Fi and Squeam. I want to welcome the Spherik brothers to the show. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hello.
And
Peter.
Predestination, this is the new one. Now, it had its launch at the Melbourne International Film Festival here in Melbourne. So you said the response was...
I felt the response was great. You know, it's definitely a mind bender, this film. So it does require you to think. I think it does bring up a lot of conversation afterwards. So yeah. Felt like the reaction was great, and I felt like people were really talking about it afterwards. Yeah,
I mean, it was great. I mean, we shot here, and so to have it as kind of a hometown screening was great. It was a packed house, and it's fun to watch a movie like this with an audience, and you can kind of see when the twists and turns are working, and it was fantastic.
I have watched it. I was fortunate. Fascinating. We want to get onto the topic, of course, of the main, without spoiling it too much, the main character as such. It's intriguing for us at our station because I was clueless that it actually had an intersex, without giving it away too much, an intersex character.
That's fine. We're happy to reveal that. I mean, I don't think it's a big secret.
Yeah.
The short story written by Robert A. Heinlein, he wrote the short story back in the late 50s. So just imagine how out there theme this was back in the late 50s. To be able to translate it today, it still seems like it's quite an untapped topic in cinema, particularly when it becomes the intersex elements in this film. It's not a film necessarily about what it means to be intersex. It's more a film about a person trying to discover their identity, and this is just part of who they are and part of the narrative. So it's a lot of fun to introduce a type of character like that into a sci-fi world because we've never really seen that before.
No, I can't imagine what Heinlein was thinking of when he did that. He's a curious man science fiction.
Yes,
so why did you pick this one?
You know, when we read the short story, it was just one of those things where when we finished reading that, it just stuck with us. And it was something that we kept saying for a year or so, that we have to turn this into a film. It's so original and so interesting, and the characters are so complex that we just couldn't let it go. And then we approached the estate, the Heinlein estate, and began that process. And when you read something and you get so drawn into it, you know, you become passionate and you just can't let it go.
First success with Daybreakers, I mean, that was phenomenal. And Ethan Hawke. So did you go set out to get him to come back?
Yeah, I mean, when we wrote the script, we sort of was thinking Ethan would be great to work with again. And Ethan really loves this type of material. The thing that was interesting is Ethan was the first person we went to with this project, but we weren't entirely sure what part he was going to play, because we were still figuring out how it was going to unfold in terms of who was going to play what and whether we could get one actor to play two genders. I mean, that was something we went back and forth with on for a long time. And then when we found Sarah Snook, that was just a revelation for us, you know. And she, you just never know if this stuff's going to work. And you never know, like, there's such a process of doing makeup tests and that constant fear of, like, is this going to be ridiculous? Are we going to be able to pull this off? And she was just so wonderful. And I think the final test we did, we're like, wow. She is just amazing. Such a rare find.
For her to get into a character playing, you know, two genders.
Yes.
How was that directing that? How did you guys approach that?
Well, I mean, you know, we wanted to try and play it in a way that was genuine and wasn't a sort of exaggerated version of her as a male character. And so we talked a lot about dialing it back, you know, not going too far. It was in terms of her performance, in terms of the makeup, in terms of all those things, to make it more realistic. And Sarah spent time with a friend of hers who's transgender and talked about, you know, the realities of it, not the kind of perception, but the, you know, what a person like that deals with on a day-to-day kind of basis. And so she did a lot of work. She did a tremendous amount of work. And we wanted it to have a certain amount of subtlety and not take it too over the top.
I mean, where it's set too, it's probably more of a strongly macho sort of era, 60s and early to mid 70s. Yeah. So having to play out the more masculine side of things must have been quite a challenge.
Exactly. I mean, she sort of starts out in the 40s and growing up in a time like that, that must have been extremely, extremely difficult. And yeah, as she transitions into the 70s as a man, I can only imagine how tough something like that would have been back in that era. And we tried to handle it with a certain level of... It's interesting with genre pictures, because it frees you up in a way that you often can't do with the drama or anything like that. So it really allowed us to explore, got to introduce a thriller element into this that was with a character that you never see in a thriller. You know, which was probably the thing that drew us most to the project, was the fact it's so scary making a film like this too, and whether a studio is actually going to be receptive to it, or that, you know, a lot of people look at it and go, are you crazy? Is this what you want to do? Like, yeah. And I got Ethan Hawke too. He said yes, so we're going to make this thing, you know. And we're so thrilled that we got to make it exactly the way we wanted to make it. You know, there was no one telling us this is too out there, you can't do this. We got to make it exactly the way we wanted to make it.
I mean, how was the studios? How did they feel about...
Well, this film is an independent film. I mean, Sony has it in the US, but this was a film that was financed independently. We got pre-sales from around the world, and Screen Australia, Film Victoria, Screen Queensland, tax incentives. So this is quite a low budget movie that was made, financed through a lot of incentives. So, and that's what gave us freedom. You know, that's what allowed us not to be dictated by a studio.
And, you know, Pinnacle here in Australia, they are, you know, really supportive of the movie, and they've been great. And, you know, they take a chance on this type of stuff. I think they have really good taste. So hopefully...
When I say that, I don't say that about my film, but I also say that about, you know,
Dallas Buyers Club
and Drive and things that they've picked up that are really good. Interesting movies.
Yeah. It certainly is an interesting movie, Predestination. You've got Noah Taylor as well, which is a wonderful, subtle performance. So really, it is a story about one person's journey, and, you know, science fiction. Will you be doing more sci-fi? I mean,
I think so. I mean, we like to do... We like sci-fi because it frees you up and allows you to explore things that can be quite topical and quite contemporary, but you get to experiment in a genre that frees you up to do whatever you want. And I love science fiction for that. I love the speculative aspect of science fiction. I love creating worlds. So sci-fi is definitely something I love.
Yeah, but I mean, what we're drawn to is interesting ideas and interesting stories. And that could be in science fiction, it could be in drama, it could be in whatever, thriller. And this story in particular was just, it's so very rare when you read something and you just say, I've never read anything like this before. And you think you've seen every time travel movie, but you've never seen we've dubbed it a transgender mind bender.
It's quite noir too.
Yeah.
It's got lots of those true confessions, and it's got the violent suitcase time traveling machine.
Yeah.
It's
got
those quirky, gritty sort of elements.
And it's kind of got a 60s kitsch to it when we travel back into the, where the girls are
trying. Yes, Space Corp. Does that exist?
And that did make me question a lot of things, actually, and about women and gender roles and space travel. That was quite humorous, but also quite sad.
Quite chauvinistic.
Yeah, very sexist.
That's actually plucked straight from Heinlein's short story. And, and what Michael I loved about the short is that it is written in the late 50s. So the 70s and the 60s is his version of what it could have been. So it's a version that is alternate to what actually existed. Yeah. And, you know, this is before man landed on the moon and all that kind of stuff. So the concept of space travel was just kind of foreign back then.
And why didn't you call it All You Zombies?
Well, because, I mean, our first film was a zombie movie called Undead. And I think, having done two horror films, I think that people would assume that we All You Zombies means lots of zombies.
Yeah.
And rather than, obviously, Heinlein's metaphorical version of that, it just made a lot of sense to change the name. I just think people would feel like they've been cheated.
I think when Drive came out, people were saying, it's not about cars, where are the car chases?
It's not Fast and Furious.
Look, I just think you've never seen this type of character in a sci-fi thriller before. At least I can't ever recall one. So we're extremely proud of that, and we hope people get excited by that and love the idea of something new in sci-fi.
I agree with Michael, and I think that, you know, the characters are so interesting, and this is a character piece more than anything. I mean, there's great thriller aspects and action and all that stuff, but it really comes down to the characters and the performance, and, you know, we couldn't be more proud of Ethan and Sarah and Noah. Yeah,
trio there, interesting connections too.
So what would you like me to say? You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream. This is Michael and Peter Spirig. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Is that what you're
doing?
Okay. You, why don't you do that? This is Michael and Peter Spirig, and I'll do that. I'll do the.
Right. This is Michael and Peter Spirig,
and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much, guys.
Not a problem at all. There's
a lot of other things I would like to have asked you, but
time is against us.
We really hope this community gets behind this film.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9, and I have the great pleasure of welcoming the star from the new Aussie film, Predestination, that's about to take over the world. And it also had its Australian premiere as part of the MIFF opening night gala. Thank you, Sarah Snook, for joining me on Joy 94.9.
Hi.
Now, I want to ask you firstly, how was it being part of the MIFF opening night? Have you ever experienced anything like it?
No, I mean, pretty amazing. I did a film, Not Suitable for Children, a little while ago that opened the Sydney Film Festival, and quite a different vibe. I mean, not as many people. I can't believe there were so many people there last night. 2,500, which is insane. Seeing your big old mug on the screen.
Did you actually stick around for the screening?
I stuck around because I had never seen it in a cinema, and I think that's, you know, that was something I really wanted to do. And I had family and friends there, and I wanted to share that experience with them and listen to the audience. I mean, they're a second soundtrack. So
yeah, exactly. And, you know, it is a very complex film. It took me two watches to really sort of catch all the nuances of it. How did you sort of gauge the audience reaction then from it?
There was a moment in the film where I think a lot more people got it. Like, there was a penny drop moment. I could hear these, like, little whispers and, like, oh, does that mean that? That kind of stuff. I love that. That's good. So hopefully that'll make people want to watch it a second time and get all of the penny drop moments.
Exactly, exactly. Because I felt sort of silly. I'm like, oh, am I getting all this? But I'm glad I'm not the only one.
No.
But I guess it does mean that people are going to go see it a couple of times. And, you know, being such a complex film and opening the film festival, does that sort of give you a bit of hope about Australian audiences and what they can sort of handle?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Australian audiences are mature entertainment viewers. We watch a lot of UK TV shows and films, a lot of US films and TV. We can hold multiple storylines in TV shows and keep us interested. You know, things like True Detective or Fargo, they really have complex storylines and complex characters. I think Australia has a love for that, and I think we have the breadth of filmmaking potential to create that here as well. So it's just a time to prove it.
Well, speaking of challenging characters, you certainly play one in Predestination. Can I ask you a little bit about your preparation for the role? What was your process behind it?
Yeah, I mean, a huge kind of challenge. I think the main part, of course, playing a man is very different. and you know, where do you kind of start with that? And I tried to think about what it would be like for a person to be told, I mean, you or I to be told that now you have to be a man. I mean, it's kind of different in the change of gender that we're used to, or more used to these days, where it's feeling like you have a different gender inside you that you want to inhabit otherwise from your external appearance. But instead, it's a gender that's forced upon a character in this situation, which is a really interesting thing to look at.
Well, it is a heartbreaking, you know, element of the film. But do you think, you know, having a film dealing with sort of gender roles and gender issues, especially to do with intersex, being in a mainstream film, essentially, is that an interesting thing to be part of, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's not something you see on TV or film very regularly. It's starting to become more of a regular thing, perhaps. And I hope this helps that, because it's just another side of life that, you know, people can see and experience.
I guess having someone, a seasoned character actor, someone like Ethan Hawke to bounce off, did that give you a little bit more of a grounding to experiment and push your own craft a bit further and sort of add more layers that might not have even been in the script?
Absolutely. I mean, he really mines the script for all it can give. And one of the main things that he brought to it was, which I really appreciated, was the love of each of the characters. But each of the characters has a love for the previous manifestation of the character, and I think that helps to tie all the characters in together across time. And that's not something that I would have thought of by myself at all. And so I think he, you know, he brings a really kind of broad experience of film, obviously, to be able to help that kind of situation. And I really learn a lot from him.
I'm guessing he probably would have learned a lot from you as well. Your role is just, it's sort of groundbreaking, really.
I don't know if he learned anything from me, but maybe an Australian accent.
Well, was that sort of hard, you know, the accent just alone?
Easier when I was doing the scenes with him, for sure. And you know, you just kind of got to be upfront and say, anytime you hear me slip, just tell me and stop me so I can do it again. I don't want to sound terrible. But someone asked me last night, when they heard me talking, they were like, "What are you? So you're not American?" Oh, yes, that's the best compliment.
that is the best compliment.
That's the best.
Now you're getting. Speaking of compliments, though, you're getting a lot, and you're getting a lot of roles sort of thrown at you. But just to name a few of your previous roles, so Predestination, the upcoming These Final Hours, another Aussie film, and also the horror prequel to The Conjuring. That's just to name a few. I know you've got a lot more coming up. That's called Jezebel. You are on a roll. Can you tell me a little bit about starring in a horror film? You know, is genre films, is that something that attracts you?
At the moment, genre films are telling a lot more interesting stories, and that's the kind of pull for me and the draw card for me. I think doing a horror film was a new, very new thing and a very different thing. Not something that I had not been a fan of horror beforehand. I definitely am now. Like, watching a horror film in the cinema, particularly, I mean, The Conjuring in the cinema, watching that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Because you just get that cathartic, like, you're jumping and gasping, and that's so much fun. It's such an experience to watch a horror film in the cinema. And then I didn't realize, but to shoot a horror film is the funniest and most fun experience ever, because you're being chased by ghosts and it's all a bit like you're playing a game. It's really silly.
As a horror fan myself, I love watching the bloopers from horror films, yeah, because it seems like the funnest sets around.
Yeah.
Why?
Why
is that?
Because you're doing such... If you were engaging with the subject matter on a realistic level, it would send you completely mental, like batty. So you have to bring some lightness somewhere. And I mean, you always find in theatre that tragedy is often the funniest time ever, because you got to, you know, combat that sadness all day with something. I mean, not like I you know, Wolf Creek 2 would be, or Wolf Creek itself would be pretty hard to shoot, because that's a little more violent, but not when you're being chased by ghosts. That's pretty fun.
that's a fun experience, is it?
Yeah.
Now, go on.
You're just playing dress-ups and like running around in your own house kind of thing. That's silly.
Talk about that, you know, did you start off young as, were you always an actress? Were you always going to be an actress?
I don't like the title of like always going to be, like, and I'm some little snotty nosed starlet kid running around and throwing a princess dress on the floor when she was having a fit. But that wasn't me. But I liked playing I watched a lot of Disney films growing up, but I always wanted to be the evil character. I wanted to play Scar, and I wanted to play Aladdin, and I wanted to play the genie, and I wanted to play Ursula, and not the princesses. I guess always wanted to do it if I could, but not realizing that you could do it as a job until later.
Well, talking about, you know, getting a momentum going in terms of roles, as I said, I've said a few times already, but you're doing so well in terms of what you actually, you know, the roles that you're getting, whether it be on TV or in film. Can we talk a little bit about Clementine, the TV series coming up?
Yeah.
And also, what's the name of the one that you're shooting at the moment then?
I'm shooting The Secret River at the moment for ABC. It's a two-part miniseries. Kate Grenville wrote a book called The Secret River a couple of years ago, and it's been turned into a stage play by Andrew Bevel, who's a really great writer, and now it's a screenplay by Jan Sardi and Matt Gudgeon. We're shooting that at the moment in country Victoria.
And do you think the stigma attached to starring in TV series is finally over for actors in general?
I don't know. I think it's like it's a constant kind of... undercurrent, but I think it's I definitely, you know, years ahead of where it was even 5 years ago. I mean, so many amazing stars from like top films are crossing into, you know, TV as a medium, which is probably just due to the strength of the script. And TV is a faster medium as well. Like you can still spend as much money. I can't imagine the amount of money Game of Thrones spends on each episode, but it would be definitely the size of one episode would be the size of an Australian film budget.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
Yep.
But they get the return on that because it's a faster kind of popcorn, I guess, for an audience. Like they get to eat it quicker.
Get to consume it.
Yeah, consume. That's the word I'm looking for.
Now, I've got to ask. You've been compared to Cate Blanchett, Jodie Foster, and even Jennifer Lawrence. Is that something? I'll give you sort of three options. Is it flattering, daunting, or a little bit annoying?
Oh, never annoying. No. daunting, if anything. Flattering, second, and never annoying.
Fantastic. No. But, you know, they've been able to, even Jennifer Lawrence has had success continually over the last few years. You know, is there anything that you can do as an actress, as a performer, as someone in the arts to sort of maintain that momentum, or is it's a little bit of luck, is it?
It's a lot of luck. Probably good management, I guess. A lot of luck. And also, I guess, perhaps not relying on other people's markers of success. Jennifer Lawrence, though I don't know her, seems to be able to not, seems to be able to, like, do work that she wants to do that because she wants to do it, not because someone said, you'll be amazing at this, and this will get you this much money, and this will be great. Like, I don't know, she seems to, Winter's Bone was was pretty great. And that was, like, very early in her career. But, she's a pretty cool chick.
So is that then a similar philosophy to the way you approach your roles then?
I hope to be able to do that. I mean, I'm sure that you have to, sometimes you just have to do a job because you've got to eat. but if you can actually do roles, I mean, that would be the goal. Like, to be able to do roles that you want to do. I don't know. Can't have everything.
No. Now, lastly, we are on Joy 94.9. I want to know, Sarah Snook, what brings you joy?
What brings me joy? Lots of things bring me joy. My friends, my family, being outside and, like, listening to the trees, that gives me joy. That's pretty, yeah.
So this whole travelling around, does that sort of fit into that?
Yeah, man. I was on set the other day and was looking around at this, like, glassy lake that is a perfect mirror of the hill that kind of descends into the lake. And it's an amazing view. And when this is an office. This is incredible. This is my office for today. That's pretty, pretty damn good. I'll take that.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah Snook, from Predestination, among other films. Honestly, in my humble opinion, you're going to be a superstar if you're not already. and no worries. And Predestination is released on August the 28th. Thank you so much again, Sarah, for joining me on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there are a chosen few that will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. These are the voyages of the crew of Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.